Live from the center of the Razorback universe.
The only radio show Razorback fans need to listen to.
Unbiased and unafraid.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ruskin and Zach.
Thank God it's...
All righty, Ruskin and Zach, are you all right over there? What are you doing?
An absolute bleep show. I don't know what's going on.
You do need headphones to do a radio program.
I usually have them in my backpack.
You don't have a power cord?
Yeah,
you're fumbling around?
I lost everything. They're on my desk.
Is it your first day?
It might be.
God almighty. DQ's got to bail you out.
It's her only intern duty that she's done since she's been here. These things are terrible.
You don't like those headsets?
I don't like these things at all.
You want your regular cans back? Yeah.
Please.
Oh, boy. Welcome in. It is Friday here on Ruskin and Zach. We're so glad that you are making us a part of this deal. 866-285-4005. So yesterday on the program, we dissected and analyzed Wednesday night pretty good. Today,
what happened? I missed it.
Oh, you didn't miss much. Today, Eric Musselman met with the media and had this to say about what went on yesterday with his program in response to Wednesday night's debacle.
Yesterday was as long as practice as we've had since I've been here. You know, we had weighted vests in many of our defensive drills and our transition drills with the understanding we'd play an early game on Saturday. But I put forth the thought that we were going to have a really difficult practice after the way we performed against LSU. And if it affects us Saturday, it affects us Saturday. But in the long, you know, over the course of the season, they're going to remember yesterday's practice.
Oh, he got after him pretty good yesterday in light of Wednesday night's debacle.
I'm no expert, but he doesn't sound happy.
No. He's not. You should have seen him on the post game Zoom Wednesday night. I mean, he was a little bit better mood today, but the right after the game, after a loss, he's got his face in his hands and he's putting his. I mean, he's a wreck.
I saw him with about 16 minutes to go in the second half, and he had his arms folded, sitting on the bench. And that's when I even said, "I'm like, oh, I would not want." He formulated that practice plan before the game ended.
That was well. He said he on the plane ride back. He was thinking of all the coaches, what they would do. What would Chuck Daly do? What would Doc Rivers do? What would, you know, all the different... Who, Hubie Brown.
What would Nolan do? I would not want the bear, man.
You know what I thought about? And I'm not using this to foretell anything. But remember that year Eddie Sutton took Oklahoma State to the Final Four in San Antonio?
Yeah, with Big Country.
No, this was after that. This was like 2005 or so. And there was a moment in the regular season where Eddie had them all practice in football gear, and there was like the TV networks had the practice tape, which was like VHS probably. It was so grainy. And you can see him running around Gallagher Iba in like shoulder pads and like gear.
Hey, sometimes you
thought
of
that.
You got to get your message across.
I thought about that when he said that they got after it yesterday. No matter what happens tomorrow, the message was sent for the long term about his level of excitement about what went down Wednesday night.
I don't blame him. I didn't watch a ton of it. I watched enough to know that you got to decide: is this a thing? Is this a larger problem, or is this just a blip and a kind of a one off deal?
Well, that's a question right there.
Yeah, that's the question. And I am. Oh my gosh. I think we're getting to a point where this is a thing. This is a real thing, and we may have to dial down some expectations on where we thought this team is and will be.
Well, what is the thing? Like we identified a couple things yesterday. Like they're not a great defensive team. Moss even talked about that today. They don't defend the three. And they don't defend the dribble drive. But other than that, they have a tremendous singing voice. I mean, that's what there is.
Last year, they were so good defensively, especially on the perimeter. And they're not good at any of it now.
My concern is, you know, and he said this today to reiterate, but you know, like, the instruction level has all been the same. Like, that hasn't
changed.
What's changed is they don't appear to want to do it. That's the difference now.
Yeah.
Is that there are players on this roster, one notably very large one, who have no interest in that end of the floor. So none whatsoever.
So what do you do? I have all the confidence in the world that the coaching staff will get them, will get the most out of them. Now, what the most out of them is, I don't know. At the beginning of the year, we said if you can go 9-9 in conference, you probably make the tournament. You're 2-3 right now. So all hope is not lost. But when you get hammered, when they put on you a 40-6 run, that's AAU stuff. That shouldn't happen to a Division I college basketball team, especially one that you thought had second weekend potential in the tournament. That it just shouldn't happen. Should not happen. And I think I've said it all year. They have no interior defense. Vanover, Williams, it just doesn't work down there. And I don't think, look, I'm president of the pirate ship that is Justin Williams. I'm president of that fan club. He doesn't solve that. He helps, but he doesn't solve it. There is a fundamental disconnect on the defensive end of the floor. And I don't know how you fix it.
Yeah.
Musk didn't get dumb overnight.
No.
So my guess is, like you said, I mean, there's probably a buy-in factor with some of these guys.
Well, all I said was
effort. It's all about it.
That's what Jalen Williams said after the game the other night.
Good.
Was guys, we need to buy in more. And if that's the case, you know, you can have a 100-hour practice. And
13 games into the season, you shouldn't have to buy in anymore.
Right. There's another thing about this, though. Like, I heard Aaron Torres earlier with Phil talking about this. And this will sound like an excuse, but it could also be a reason. You can interpret it however you want. I'm a believer in Musselman, so I see this as a reason. But they never had, this is inarguable, I think, this part. They never had that moment in non-conference where everything was exposed. And if the season was normal without COVID, they would have gone over to Las Vegas on Thanksgiving and played Louisville and a couple other P5 teams and got their heads handed to them. And that would have meant that the whole month of December would have been, okay, none of that worked. How do we get ready over the next 6 or 8 games before SEC play? They're finding out their problems in the middle of SEC play, which is I think is totally valid. They did not get kicked in the face, really, in non-conference at all.
So we thought going into conference play that it was Kentucky, it was Tennessee. I mean, preseason was Kentucky, Tennessee, and probably everybody else would be shuffling between 3 and 14.
Probably not Kentucky this year because they were 1-6 going
in. No, I'm talking about before the season ever tipped off. Oh, okay. I mean, we're talking about Kentucky, Tennessee.
Yeah.
We had no idea Alabama was any good. We had no idea that LSU was any good. We thought they were going to be okay, but we never thought that we sort of put Arkansas in that group, and maybe we just got carried away with all the 4-stars and the must-bust thing and all the transfers and the new roster. And played together. I can remember right after the first game saying, okay, you know, they played 40 minutes together. They played 80 minutes together. They played 120 minutes together. This will get better. And it seems like we're on this yo-yo where you get one good performance, you get one bad performance. Good performance, bad performance. I expect them to come out and play hard Saturday. Alabama's a different animal. As much as LSU has athletes and shooters and all this stuff, Bama's totally different.
I don't know what... Maybe this is probably why I sit here, but when I'm looking at the schedule and I'm looking at Alabama at the end of it this week with your two games, I'm thinking, tough. We have to win Wednesday night. And that was not evident in any way, shape, or form. Now you're looking at an 0-2 week, which is not, you can't have a lot of those, but I don't know. There's a ton of games left. We know they're flawed now. They know they're flawed now. And can they cook something up to mitigate some of these shortcomings that they have? I wonder what will happen when Justin Smith comes back. And he's trying. He hasn't gone through a whole practice yet, Musselman said, but he's at least doing something.
He's 2 weeks from the day he sets foot back on the court in a game to being back in game shape.
Yeah.
How much can you milk out of him
No.
You know, with a bum ankle. It's not like, you know, he broke a finger.
You know what I would do? This was just my knee-jerk reaction to the last two games. I wouldn't play Vanover again. That's what I would do. I would roll with whatever's left. And I know they don't have Robinson anymore because of the injury, but I would roll. He can't. Doesn't help us.
Bench is getting short.
He doesn't help us at all. Short.
You're talking about playing seven guys.
I understand that. I wouldn't play him ever again. That's my knee-jerk reaction to what I've seen in league play. The man has four blocks in five games.
That's a problem.
He's 7'3".
Should run into one.
I mean, Eddie Gerdecki could get four blocks in five games.
Oh, no
What? Eddie Gerdecki on your bingo card.
Yeah, you had that.
Eddie Gordet. What was his name? The little guy, Bill Veeck? Never mind. News coming up. Russ gonna say.
Often stolen from and copied. This is Ruskin and Zach.
Connor O'Gara is part of Saturday Down South. Also a podcast host. You hear him on all kinds of different shows talking about the SEC, and he's spending some time with us here now on Ruskin and Zach. Connor, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing well, you know, can't complain. I feel like I'm getting into a bit of a rhythm here with like all the way too early 2021 talk. So, I mean, I'm pretty much in mid-season, off-season form right now.
That's good. Where do you come down on this whole notion that we have to bust up the monopoly that is Alabama to save college football?
I think that's easier said than done, right? I mean, They tried adding more games, and it still didn't matter, right? I mean, let's go back to when this all came about. The playoff system was put in place because, let's be honest, people at Alabama fatigued, and they got tired of seeing the SEC doing what it did. And, you know, we've now seen six straight championships in which the SEC has been a part of it. And I don't think that's by accident. I don't think changing the system is all of a sudden going to alter that. I think when you're talking about a sport that the elite teams pick from a different talent pool than the rest of the teams, it's going to always be like that, no matter what you try and do. So I think that while there could be some occasional, you know, 2019 LSU teams that kind of come a little bit out of nowhere and surprise teams that haven't been there before, I mean, even with a new system, I don't really think that's going to change all that much. And I think it's just the thought of something new that excites people. While I understand their point, there is a bit of a fatigue with the teams at the top, and it feels like the same teams in there. And when ratings are down, that certainly suggests that the public favor is certainly dying out. But, you know, I just don't know how much it's really going to change everything.
I thought the ratings this year were maybe in part to Alabama, but I think when Ohio State got in, I think a lot of people said this thing is just, this is rigged. I don't want to. This is like pro wrestling. I don't want to have time for this. It didn't feel like some people thought the legitimacy was questioned when they kept changing rules so Ohio State could get into the thing in the first place.
And the irony being that, of course, Ohio State loses by the exact same margin, the exact same score that Texas A&M lost by. And it's like, all right, so that's the whole thing that I get frustrated with. And when I hear people like David Pollack get up there and say that, well, we know who the best four teams are. No, you don't. No, you don't. Because that's why you play the games. You know, that's why you actually have to go through this thing called a season. And you can't just sit here and pretend like you know everything about the sport. If that were the case, then you'd be cleaning up Vegas right now. And, you know, they wouldn't have built those, you know, those casinos out there in the middle of the desert. So I just don't necessarily buy that, and I understand where people are coming from. You know, I keep going back to this point of what was a casual college football fan more likely to tune into? You know, I have two buddies that graduated from Iowa, and I think that if they're going to watch a game on a Monday night, are they going to watch Ohio State Alabama again, or are they going to watch something like Alabama Cincinnati? In theory, they're going to watch Alabama Cincinnati. Now, we don't necessarily have a sport that really allows for that to happen very much, but I think people at least want to see the possibility of it. And they want to feel like there's as many parameters as possible and barriers to entry instead of just rewarding the team that they feel is best.
And I think another thing is the complicated relationship with the bowls. I mean, this year, and the TV ratings bared this out, the biggest day of college football was January 1st with the semifinals, and that's usually the big day of college football because you have the Rose and the Sugar Bowl on those days. And then January 8th, is the national championship game is not the biggest day in the sport, it feels like.
Yeah, that's kind of weird because, you know, the national championship should be on its own, right? I mean, it shouldn't be at the end of a full day of football, you know?
Yeah.
I think that you're right, though. It does feel like that's the biggest day. And I mean, I think January 2nd was pretty awesome this year, too. I really enjoyed the slate that we were able to get out of that. It was kind of a nice little, you know, post-holiday, you know, kind of wean yourself off of football type of day. But I agree with you. And I don't necessarily know that a different system changes that. I think that you're still going to want to give that game its biggest stage possible, right? And you're still going to want to make sure that you have the most possible eyeballs on there. When ESPN is negotiating that contract, that's a big part of it. And there's a reason why, you know, we're talking about this game having millions and millions of viewers. And I remember, you know, the 2015 when Michigan State and Alabama were there, and at ESPN had to refund advertisers like something like $20 million because Michigan State didn't give them a competitive game. Like that's the type of stuff that we're talking about here that's at stake, that I think a lot of people can lose sight of when they're talking big picture with college football.
We're talking with Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South here on Ruskin and Zach today. As far as Alabama, Mac Jones, some other guys going pro early, but, you know, that would be a story at, like, you know, maybe an LSU or a Texas A&M, but I think right now the machine keeps rolling right along with whoever's next in line, it feels like.
You guys, Alabama had four offensive players drafted in the top 15 picks last year, including their quarterback, their once-in-a-generation talent quarterback, and then the offense got better. I mean, this is something that I think we take for granted because it's Alabama. If it were any other program, we would be just blown away right now. If LSU were doing this right now, or the program, I don't know, like USC, we're doing this right now, we would just be falling over ourselves with how crazy of an accomplishment that is. But at Alabama, you're right. I mean, you can step in there, and when, as long as Nick Saban is there, we're going to have these sky-high expectations. You know, when we're doing the way-too-early top 25 for the upcoming season, and, you know, Alabama's coming off a national championship, or Clemson is, you automatically have to pencil in Alabama and Clemson in, I think, in those top three, maybe four spots if it's a really, really down year for one of those teams. But that's where you start. And I think even this year, I looked at this and I'm like, man, yeah, those teams lose a lot, but they're still pretty loaded with what they're going to have coming back next year. And I think that you could still make a really good case that Alabama, even though it's going to lose those guys, they're actually going to have more recruiting talent next year, which is crazy. Najee Harris is the only five-star skill player who was out there for that team this year, and now next year they're potentially going to have a five-star quarterback in Bryce Young, as long as he doesn't follow Steve Sarkisian to Texas, and they're going to be loaded with five-star skill players. And I think that that's something that, you know, at Alabama, where your number one recruiting classes are normal, we assume that, but we should still at the same time appreciate that for what it's worth, because this type of success is unprecedented, and we shouldn't expect it really anywhere outside of Tuscaloosa.
And probably we'll never see it again, certainly maybe our lifetimes after this run ends, whenever that is. And the thing that I am just awestruck about what Alabama does is, I think if they do this deal with Bill O'Brien, I believe he's the seventh offensive coordinator under Nick Saban. And it's like, most places in a normal situation, as soon as the assistants start being picked away, the organization starts to falter. This is the total opposite. The more assistant coaches get taken away, the stronger Saban and Alabama get. It's amazing.
You guys, I'm old enough to remember when there was a very popular summer storyline involving a certain Scott Cochran going to Georgia, and that was going to change Alabama and the strength program, and that was going to be such a big deal. Remember that? Wasn't that fun? We were talking about that. That was like a solid 2-day story or something like that. I don't remember how long it was, but the staff is entirely different from 2017, or for 2018 rather, when they're playing in that national championship. And it didn't matter. It didn't matter that Danny Enos left in the middle of the night to go to Miami. It didn't matter that Michael Blacksley left and Josh Gattis kind of cowardly followed him around and then ditched him to go to Michigan. Like, it didn't necessarily come down to that. And I think that's just what truly blows me away about this program. And you know, there are a lot of people that assuming Bill O'Brien is the guy. I mean, I'm not going to judge strictly based on his Wikipedia page, which currently says he's the Alabama offensive coordinator. But if Bill O'Brien is the guy, there are going to be a lot of people saying, wow, Bill O'Brien ruined Deshaun Watson. He's this, he's that. I'm also old enough to remember when people were saying that about Steve Sarkisian and why he's going to be such a bad hire. And he turned out to be, in my opinion, easily the best coordinator in the history of Alabama football. So I'm not going to poo-poo a hire of Bill O'Brien. I'm just going to chalk it up to Alabama and say, yeah, he's probably going to get in line and then probably going to start scoring 45 points a game like no big deal.
Yeah. Connor O'Gara is our guest Saturday down south here on Ruskin and Zach. What is your read on what's happening at Tennessee with Pruitt and the hiring freeze and all of the allegations flying around there?
Guys, how long do you have? I mean,
as long as you need.
This thing, from the very beginning when this first came out, it felt a little bit reminiscent of 2017 Jim McElwain at Florida, where you just sort of felt like there was this in-house initiative to get him out and to boot him. And if they could forego that buyout money, which you know Tennessee would love to do, and especially with Hugh Freeze just sitting right there, it feels like they're going to do whatever they can to try and make that happen, knowing the dynamics at play here are complicated. The average person look at this situation and say, if you want him gone so badly, just fire him. Well, you know, Philip Fulmer is kind of the one who's calling the shots there. And if Philip Fulmer, you know, is forced to fire him and they don't have cause, then, you're stuck with a buyout just south of $13 million. And you'd prefer not to have to do that. And if you feel like you can make this move and bring on a Hugh Freeze or something like that, and if this is only minor violations or something, then, you know, you kind of are able to circumvent the system. And I'm not saying definitively that's what they're doing and that I have proof of that, but it sure sounds like it, because this whole thing is just smelled fishy. You see the transfers. It's not good when guys like DeAndre Johnson, the best pass rusher on that team, Wanya Morris, a former five-star offensive lineman, these guys are entering the transfer portal. Ty Chandler, somebody who is going to get a lot of run next year as well, entering the transfer portal. But we're just kind of left here thinking, this is feels like a matter of time. And I've been asked repeatedly, do I think that Jeremy Pruitt will be there at SEC Media Days in 2021? And I can't see a way in which that happens at this point. It feels like this is the beginning of the end. And one way or another, they're going to make sure that they can fire him with cause.
Yeah, definitely. Let's spin this to Arkansas here in our remaining time here, Connor. And assuming there's a 12-game schedule, and Arkansas does have a non-conference game with Texas as a part of the schedule, if everything is normal in 2021, what is the likelihood, and you talk about way too early, of Arkansas getting to a bowl game in year two under Sam Pittman? They were going to go to a bowl game this year, but COVID had other things in mind with that Texas Bowl with TCU.
I think it's good. I think it's really good. And I think the staff retention is so important. In addition to all of those seniors returning, and we get guys like Grant Morgan that are coming back, that's huge. That's so important. And that kind of says a lot about guys that actually want to play football at your program. I think we take that for granted when it comes to college kids. And, you know, with this weird situation in 2020 with the pre-year of eligibility, It's nice to be able to see a program like Arkansas that's trying to build something, be able to take advantage of that. But I think this comes down to the staff retention. We praised Sam Pittman and the hires that he made throughout this, you know, we praised him throughout the season for the hires that he made when he first stepped foot there. And I think being able to keep someone like Barry Odom, if that happens, and if he doesn't ultimately get poached by an LSU, that's so incredibly important for this team, because I like the talent coming back. I will bang the drum all offseason for Treylon Burks. I think he's so, so fun to watch. And I think that KJ Jefferson has a lot of potential in Kendall Briles' offense. But, you know, this is going to come down to being able to retain that staff and, you know, not have the same issues that they had at the end of the year, where you kind of started to see some of those depth issues creep up, especially on the defensive line. And that just doesn't work in the SEC. And I think that's why you saw some of those numbers kind of skew at the end of the year. But I think those chances are really good. I mean, I think getting to six wins is certainly realistic. I think even with the non-conference game like Texas, I mean, ask my coworker, Michael Bratton, who's been predicting Arkansas to beat Texas for like the last 2 months or something like that. I don't know if he still is up that impression with Stark over there, but I think that there's certainly a chance. So, yeah, I'm optimistic if I'm an Arkansas fan, and I'm thinking bowl or bust in year two.
Well, the thing, too, that, and, you know, everybody gets caught up in, you know, in quarterbacks and receivers and defensive backs. But the thing, when my co-host Zach likes to talk about, the most impressive thing to him about going back to Alabama for a second is their offensive line. And when you have an offensive line like that, you can do whatever you want offensively. And I think that Arkansas, the plan is to have an inside track at with Sam Pittman's experience of building an offensive line like that here, where they can put an offense out there that can do whatever it wants.
Brett Bielema did it as well as anyone there, right? I mean, that's, you know, just going to copy the Brett Bielema. No, I'm kidding. I shouldn't bring that up. But I think it's different if you're doing
when Pittman left Bielema, the offensive line went to shambles after that.
That's a good point. You know what? That's a really good point. It probably gets lost in the shuffle when you talk about Brett's, I don't want to call it a legacy, I guess tenure. I'll leave it at that. But, yeah, I mean, I think you need to be able to build that up. I think Arkansas at the line of scrimmage, that was the biggest question mark I had coming into this past season, where I thought it was really going to hurt them down the stretch, especially if they faced those depth issues. But I think with Sam Pittman, you would trust to be able to build that up and to be able to hang around with SEC teams. And, you know, with the exception of, you know, like Alabama, I think that Arkansas passed the eye test and looked a lot more formidable in that area this year. And I think that should definitely continue, especially with a normal year in the strength program. I mean, we probably lost sight of that, about these kids not really getting a full off season with, you know, the weights programs and all that stuff. But I think Arkansas would definitely stand to benefit from just having a relatively normal 2021.
Now, I believe we're talking with Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South here on Ruskin and Zach. I believe you're in Florida. So what is the buzz level about all this Urban Meyer stuff today down there?
You know, I'm in Orlando now. Jacksonville's like, it's like give or take like 2 hours away. So I don't really get like a ton of the Jaguars fans. It's more so like we're a little bit closer to Tampa Bay down here.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit more of the Brady fever. But, you know, I get the feeling that that'll change because I think there's a lot of the fair weather Tampa fans in my area in Central Florida. And I think that would definitely change to Jacksonville. I know that there'd be all sorts of excitement. I mean, who wouldn't want to go see that with Urban and Trevor Lawrence and that pool there? I mean, goodness gracious, talk about a triple threat that Jacksonville's going to have. I mean, all they need to do is bring back Blake Bortles, and I think that pretty much that's a sellout for every single game this year. That's a dynasty in the making if I've ever seen one.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, let's tell us about your podcast. Plug that for you here. How can people listen to Connor O'Gara?
Yeah, so Saturday Down South, Saturday Down South podcast is something that we do year round and two times during the year during the regular season. We're doing two times a week. We're doing three times a week during the pandemic and all that stuff. But we're going to have some great off season content. As y'all know, during this time of year, it can get a little bit slower. But it's a good chance to be able to talk some big picture stuff. So I know that we're going to be doing a ton of that in the off season at the SDS Pod on Twitter. Subscribe, like, follow, all that fun stuff. Join our Facebook group. But yeah, we like to, just like you guys, I mean, like, we like to be able to have some fun and, you know, kind of mix things up a little bit and keep things light and loose, because it's a long year. We got to be able to pace ourselves a little bit.
That's very true. Connor O'Gara, Saturday Down South. Thanks so much, man, for coming on today. I appreciate it.
Yep. Appreciate it.
Connor O'Gara with us here on Ruskin and Zach. Yes, the we were doing five a week during the pandemic, what we were doing, you know, here. And I still have no idea how we did that. You, like, were you here for that, DQ?
I was at the, like, very beginning.
How did we do that?
I don't know. The quarantine bracket took up a long
time.
It
did take up a lot of time.
That was a genius move to put that in.
It was just so... I don't know how we did it. I don't know why we did it. We did it, though. I don't know. All right. We'll make that from our SEC report, which is brought to you by Emi Catfish. Started 11 years ago down in Benton in a trailer, and now locations all across Arkansas, including right there on Joyce in Fayetteville. Had that gumbo last week. Oh, man. Come on. It's good stuff. Good stuff. And, of course, they got the best catfish around. Hush Puppies. Mama's Tartar Sauce, an original family recipe for Mama. It's all at Eat My Catfish in Fayetteville and across the state, too. All right. Ruskin and Zach, 866-285-4005 is the phone number. We did get a text here. I was going to ask him about the lottery. I forgot. But someone wants to know, DQ, if you won the Powerball, what would you spend your money on? It's a great question.
That's actually what I was thinking because I didn't call him until like 30 seconds before we went back. I was actually thinking
you were
about
in there
the
daydreaming?
Stupid lottery. I would, after I did all of the like, pay for my school, pay for my sister's school, all of that stuff, I guess I would probably go to Europe and never come back here.
Okay.
That's
never
what I would
come
do.
Come back here. Okay. Fair enough. No more of the lower field, huh? You just out of here. Okay.
Yeah, I'd have to get better at French, but.
Yeah, yes. You know what's the weirdest thing? I had a very lengthy dream last night that I was that the family and I rented a cottage in the French countryside and went on vacation.
See, that would be amazing. Like, give away all your money, but have enough to where you can do that.
It's so weird. Like, it was one of those, like, my bedroom had a sink next to the bed. Like, it's just bizarre. I never dream about this stuff. I usually dream about what we're going to do in this idiotic show every day. That was bizarre. I don't know. There was these little shops with big wheels of cheese in the window. It was nuts. I'm not drunk, I promise you. Drunk. All right. More to come in just a moment. We'll get back into basketball for those of you that missed our flaming hot takes about it earlier. We'll get to that next.
The Bad Boys of Arkansas Radio.
This is Ruskin and Zach.
This is Ruskin and Zach, ESPN 99.5 in Northwest Arkansas. ESPN Arkansas around the state, streaming on hitthatline.com. 26 to the hour. National title game tonight. We'll have a after Eric Musselman show, by the way, on our air with Sean McDonough and Greg McElroy on the call on ESPN Radio. How about that, Zach Arns? Huh?
I love it.
There you go. So let's get some more insight on this from Lynn Scarborough from lindysports.com, Lindy's College Football. You know Lynn, if you follow college football at all around these parts. Lynn, how you doing today?
Doing great, man. Doing great. Two and a half hours to kickoff. I'm actually talking to you from our publishing office. A lot of the folks in the audience will know, you know, we publish special editions, not only our regular editions and our radio network, but we publish commemorative editions for the winners of the Super Bowl, the World Series, sometimes the NBA, according to what market it is, and the college football playoff. And, of course, you never know in advance who's going to win. If we did, we wouldn't be doing this. We'd be, you know, living out in Las Vegas.
So I think we know who's going to win tonight.
Well, I can tell you this. We gamble that we do. However, if you think back to the time when the New York Giants played the Denver Broncos in the Super Bowl, with about a minute left in the ball game, we were very close to calling the press and saying, go ahead and crank up the printer. And 60 seconds later, we'd had the wrong team. So you just never know. And, you know, and when it's this much on the line, we're obligated with our agreement with the printer and the news distributors, guys, to have a magazine on the press within 3 or 4 hours of the game. We do an 80-page magazine plus the cover. And so we've been working for about the last really 10 days, but heavily ever since last Saturday when we knew for sure who the two teams were going to be. We'll have both magazines ready, basically, before the game, 64 pages of it. And then when the game's over, then we do the front cover and get the table of contents done. We'll have about 12, 16 pages about the national championship game itself. We've got people out there who will be writing for us. We're here in the publishing office, you know, editing and designing and putting together everything. And within 3 or 4 hours of it being done, we'll have that magazine on the press. And there'll be another really, really good magazine that doesn't get printed. And it's been that way for us probably for, we've been doing all these magazines, guys, for probably 20 years. And every time we go into one, we have to prepare two. So yeah. Some of the best magazines ever been done didn't get printed.
didn't make it to the printing press.
Make it to the press.
What about the game tonight? I think most people, especially here, given what Alabama did to Arkansas, a lot of Razorback fans think this is Alabama and it's not close. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think that's going to be the case, too. But then I was, you know, we had not started on the Clemson magazine, but I had gone down to Orlando to cover the Northwestern-Auburn game. And on the way coming back, I listened to those games. I drove down there, and on the way coming back, I listened to both of my final games. I'd already started putting some stuff together just on my own for Clemson, because I think everybody thought Clemson was going to win. And maybe to the degree, you know, were people more confident about Clemson winning than they are now about Alabama winning? I don't know. But I know there wasn't a whole lot of money going Ohio State's way on that, and that was a pretty dominant performance by Ohio State. So I think sometimes we'll make a mistake if we put all our eggs in one basket, which we can never afford to do. I do think Alabama will win the game. If you tell me that it's not going to be a close game, then I absolutely think Alabama's going to win the game. But listen, the way that Ohio State played against Clemson, it's Clemson. It's not a bad football team, and Ohio State had their way with them. And do I think Ohio State can repeat their performance against Alabama? No, I don't think they can. If you told me that Ohio State's going to play the way they did against Clemson and Alabama's going to play the way they did against Notre Dame, I absolutely think Ohio State's got a chance. But that's not what I anticipate happening in starting in 2.5 hours.
I think we know how you stop Ohio State. You've got to control Justin Fields. I have absolutely no clue how you stop Alabama. And I was making the point earlier, I don't think it has anything to do with the outside receivers, running backs, quarterback, anything like that. It's those five guys up front. And you've got those five guys. You can do whatever you want.
That's right. I covered the Alabama-Auburn game and was in the press box for that and kind of made notations on how long Mac Jones had to drop back and stand there uncontested and allow his receivers to run their medium and long routes, as opposed to how long Bo Nix had to stand there uncontested to allow his receivers run their medium and long routes. And it's like 1 second versus four. And that doesn't sound like much time, but when you got a guy that can run 100 yards in 11 seconds, give him 4 seconds to run, as opposed to giving him 1 second to run. And if your quarterback's standing there pretty well flat-footed to look around his options, as opposed to your quarterback running for his life, and that's more or less what happens every game against Alabama, is that they've got their quarterback, with few exceptions of times, their quarterback's got the time to be able to let his receivers run their routes. And almost every opponent that plays Alabama does not have that leisure. And you're right, it starts with the line. But then you look at their skilled people, where do you hone in? You know, Ohio State's got Trey Sermon. He's outstanding. But Alabama's got Najee Harris and others. You know, Justin Fields is a great quarterback. You know, if you want to say who's got the most talented quarterback, probably Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
If you said I can only have the quarterback, I'd take him over Mac Jones. But that doesn't put Mac Jones down. He was a Heisman Trophy finalist, and Justin Fields was not. And Ohio State's got a couple of good receivers. Alabama's got like four. And they got one that didn't even get to play after, you know, half the season. So it's just really tough with an offensive line. And then their kicker, a really nice young man. I know his family. His guy's name is Will Reichert. And Alabama has had a problem in years when their kicking game would lose games for them or keep games close. And this year they've got a guy that's a really good place kicker. So they really, on the offensive side of the ball, guys, you're right. It's not tough to find a weakness. They don't have a weakness. You've got to make them you got to make them have errors, and then you've got to perform well yourself.
Talking with Lynn Scarborough from Lindy's Sports here on Ruskin and Zach. What's your take on the conversation about how much longer Saban wants to do this? He'll be 70 on Halloween this year, and that's not old in present times like it was you know, a long time ago. But if he wins tonight, he's got the most titles, but he ties Bear for the most at Alabama. So how much longer do you think he wants to do this?
Well, I don't know. People that know me know how old I am and how long I've been doing this. I was in school when Shug Jordan and Bear Bryant were the two coaches at Alabama and Auburn. I went to Auburn Journalism School, Alabama Law School, and Coach Jordan and Coach Bryant were there at that time. And back then, there was a state law or regulation, whatever, practice, that you were not able to do that over 70 years old. And I don't think that's the case anymore. So I don't think there's anybody going to be beating on the door telling Coach Saban he's got to be gone. But if you're Coach Saban, you're making that kind of money and you're able to still bring in recruits at that level, and why would you stop? You know, I could see him doing it for, you know, for a number of years, but you know, the, you know, once, you know, you're going to get to the point that, you know, that you say, why do I want to keep doing this? And I've, you know, you've had a lot of coaches, guys that have retired at 60 years old because they said, look how much I've done already. And I want to have the latter part of my life where I'm not having to, you know, have pressure on me every day. And if the kind of money these guys make now at that level, then you can certainly afford to do that. You know, you, the three of us could make it on a whole lot less, you know, give me about, you know, 10% of his salary and I'll be happy to, you know, do whatever they tell me to do. So, in fact, I'd probably say that about the lowest paid coach in the conference. So, but no, I don't have any insight into that, but it wouldn't surprise me to see him coach a number more years.
I want to get your thoughts on the college football selection process. A lot of noise about whether or not Ohio State should even be there. I think talent-wise, obviously they belong, but I've often questioned whether or not they earned the right to get there. My other assertion is we've got an Alabama problem in college football. They are at the top of the mountain, and there's a gap between them and everybody else, and it just kind of makes the college football playoff uninteresting.
Well, I'm not sure there's that much of a gap. You know, Clemson, you know, beat them twice and played them two other times, and this is the third time Ohio State's been there in 8 years. And, you know, and in the SEC alone, in the last 10 years, you've had four SEC teams play for national championships. In fact, you've had four play multiple times. Let's see. Auburn's played twice. LSU's played twice. Alabama's played like six. So you've had three SEC teams that have played multiple times in the last decade since 2010, and Georgia played for one. So it's not like they're just running away with people. It's the fact that they're consistent. It's the fact that they're always there. You can say, well, it was Alabama and Georgia or Alabama and Auburn or Alabama and LSU, but it's always Alabama. And I think that's the big thing, is not that they've so much running away. I think every year there's teams with good talent that are close to Alabama's. It's just that it's not always the same time, the same game, because maybe Ohio State's the one that stays the closest most of the time. Of course, they don't have to play them every year like LSU and Texas A&M and Auburn, Arkansas, like they've got to play them every year. Oh, your first question, no, I don't think, and with this being said, I think Ohio State's got a good chance to win, and well, not good, they got a reasonable chance, and I have nothing against Ohio State, but I do have a problem with double standard, and this is whether it's in business or politics or sports or whatever, and everybody agreed to that rule. When the season started, the Big Ten agreed that if you didn't play six games, you didn't qualify for the championship. And Ohio State knew that. Everybody knew that. And the conference knew that they were starting the season in late October, where the other conferences started in September, or six other conferences did and four didn't. But they knew they were putting in a schedule when they didn't have any way to do makeup games. And they knew that. They're adults. Nobody put a gun to their head. And they could have done what the ACC and the Big 12 and the ACC did, but they chose not to. So they chose to give themselves no flexibility. Then they canceled games because they had because of COVID, and they probably should have, but their regulations were a little stricter than other people's. And so at the end of the year, you've got Ohio State that only played in five ball games. Well, you have to ask the question, if that had been Northwestern, would they have made that decision? Mm-hmm. If that had been Indiana, would they have made that decision? They'll say, yes, they would. I kind of doubt it, because Ohio State was the favored son, and they wanted to do this to get Ohio State in there because they thought they'd had the best chance, and I think they gave unequally fair treatment, or you could call it unfair, as Indiana probably would. I think Indiana, by the rules, probably should have played in the championship game for the Big Ten, which means Ohio State wouldn't have been there. But then this, you know, this has been a year when equal standard has not always worked, guys.
Well, it's
in a whole lot of areas, and football was one of them. With that being said, I don't begrudge Ohio State. We're going to be doing an Ohio State magazine. It's going to be great if they win. But all things being equal, I like it when rules are applied fairly, and I'm not sure that they were in this case.
Lynn Scarborough is our guest, lindysports.com here on Ruskin and Zach, and of course the Lindy's football magazines. Lynn, what did you take away from year one with Sam Pittman here at Arkansas? Three wins, three more wins than Chad Morris ever had, who had zero conference wins at Arkansas. Just what did you think watching Arkansas from afar this year?
Well, I don't know if you saw it, but I wrote a column probably two-thirds of the way through the season putting high praise on Sam Pittman. And you know, with all due respect to the other new coaches, to me, the new coach that did the most with the least was Sam Pittman. And he's the guy that people knew of the least. I knew of him, obviously. But a lot of folks didn't. And when they announced Sam Pittman, I had people say, "Who?" I said, "Just wait till you see what he's going to do." I think he did a remarkable job. In fact, had he won one more game, I do have a vote in one of the Coach of the Year votes, and I seriously considered had they won. Of course, I knew they wouldn't beat Alabama, but if they had won a couple of games before that, which they could have won, I'd have probably voted Sam Pittman for Coach of the Year. I don't know him; I've never interviewed him, but I'm a big fan of what he's done. He's solid. I feel like he really wants to be at Arkansas. I don't feel like it's a stepping stone for him. I think it's where he wants to be. And I think that being the case, he can recruit people that also want to be there. And I really look for he's got a real tough thing, those guys, because LSU and Alabama and Auburn and some years Texas A&M, those guys are traditionally among the top, 15 programs in the country. Alabama almost always in the top 10, and LSU and Auburn not that far behind them a lot of years. And it's tough to win when you're having to go up against those kind of teams every year. And then when the SEC does you the huge favor of when they add two more games, they give you Florida and Georgia.
Right.
I mean, what did Sam Pittman do to hack those people off?
No.
I mean, it's like you're coaching a team that didn't win a single conference game last year, that a bunch of its players are gone, and you're bringing in a whole new coaching staff. And so let's make sure we make it fair. Let's let that situation also play Florida and Georgia as the two teams we add. I mean, give me a break. You know, they said they tried to make it, as equal as they could. Really? I wonder what they're using as a horizontal line to do that. But I think, considering the situation that the SEC threw on Sam Pittman with those two additional games, that makes what he did, I think, even more complimentary to what he achieved.
You mentioned you went to Auburn, did J school at Auburn, then go to Alabama. I know families that have Auburn and Alabama grads that don't speak to each other in the month of November. Do you just not talk to yourself during November?
So do I.
I want to ask you about Brian Harsin down at Auburn. On paper, it seems like it's a solid, safe hire.
I absolutely think so. I think there's more controversy about whether or not Gus Malzahn should have been fired than whether or not it was a good hire to get Brian Harsin. If you make the assumption that you're going to get rid of Malzahn, then I'm in the midst of writing a column that's going to be out next week that discusses that whole situation at Auburn. Should he have been hired? What was the hiring of Harsin good? And then what the future holds for Auburn under this circumstance? But I think Brian Harsin really covered all the lines. I don't know if he's a grand slam home run, but he certainly was a home run. He's 44 years old, so he's got the youth. He's got head coaching experience and successful head coaching experience at Boise State. He was there at Arkansas State, so he's been in the South and exposed to this. He was a coordinator at Texas as well. He's obviously, if you were to say to someone every year, name the three group of five teams that have the best shot at cracking into the final bowl group, you're going to name Boise State and two other teams. And those two other teams might change from time to time, but it's almost always going to be Boise State. Just like I said before with Alabama, you got other teams that are there with them, but you always name Alabama. Boise State has been the bell cow of the group of five teams, really since they beat Oklahoma that time. And I don't see that changing even with Coach Harsin gone. But he's bringing some of his guys with him. He hired Derek Mason as the defense coordinator. I think that's a brilliant hire in getting him. He's keeping two or three guys with Auburn connections. His running back coach is going to be Cadillac Williams, and that's about as strong as you could get, certainly to Auburn people. Him being an All-American and an All-Pro in his pro career would be a good hire most anywhere. So I really think Coach Harsin is a really good hire there. Same situation though as Coach Pittman. He has to play Georgia every year. That's almost as big a rival for Auburn as Alabama is. In fact, Auburn has more success in recent years over Alabama than it has over Georgia. In fact, Auburn's beaten Alabama twice when they were number one in the country. In fact, Malzahn beat Alabama twice when they were number one in the country. And they didn't beat Georgia but twice the whole time that Malzahn was the head coach. So I think it's a solid hire. And but again, it's like with Coach Pittman, he's got to play Georgia and Alabama, Texas A&M, LSU, you got to play them every year. And it's just what it is being a head coach in the Western Division of the SEC.
Lynn Scarborough, lindysports.com, and, of course, the Lindy's football magazines. There'll be a commemorative championship edition out soon after the result of tonight's game. Lynn, thanks for the time today. We really appreciate it.
Hey, guys. Yeah, always good to talk with y'all. Let's do it again.
Okay, thank you so much. Lynn Scarborough with us here on Ruskin and Zach.
Went to Alabama and Auburn.
Right.
Covering all your bases down right there.
Well, that's how you say neutral, I suppose, is to go to both schools.
So you don't get hurt.
That's exactly right. I mean, I can't imagine, like, if you're on WJOX down there and you went to one school or the other, like, the crap you take. Like, they used to have a morning show that was really good. I don't know why they got rid of it. Maybe they didn't want to do it anymore. But they had, like, a host, like a neutral guy who wasn't from Alabama at all. And then they had Jay Barker and Aldo Greco. So you had both schools represented on the show.
Aldo Greco, kicker.
Yeah. Kicker, Auburn Tigers.
Auburn Tigers. Right. Yeah. Couldn't get a...
Nice guy. He had me on the show a couple times. Yeah. But, yeah, I can't... Like, if you get into broadcasting down there, you have to be like, I went to South Alabama or something like that. Yeah. Like, you can't pick a side because you're gonna, you're gonna get hell all day from the other side of... Anyway,
it's one of those times you lie on your resume.
That's right. Yeah,
I went to Southern Miss.
I went to Georgia Tech.
Yeah, right. Like that. Right. Someplace in.
Also, you hate the, you like the ACC then.
Whatever you do, don't say you went to Central Florida.
That's right.
Oh, I see now.
It's your cop car, tough guy.
That's right.
Sure.
Ruskin and Zach, we'll do Hall of Fame Walk of Shame coming up here on Ruskin and Zach on ESPN 99.5 and around the state on ESPN Arkansas. Baxter Regional is following all the state and CDC guidelines, keeping you safe right now, and they do that all the time, of course, but committed to providing excellent care to every patient every time. Please wear a mask and maintain 6 feet of social distance. If you need a COVID test, you can call them and get it set up at 870-508-7047 and make your appointment there. You can also keep up at Baxter Regional Medical on Facebook or go to baxterregional.org/coronavirus. Hall of Fame Walk of Shame coming up. Ruskin and Zach.
The Razorback Talk Show designed for smart fans.
This is Ruskin and Zach.
Razorback men's basketball team looks to get back on track tomorrow in Tuscaloosa against Crimson Tide. Tide enter the game 10-3 in the year. 5-0 conference play. Arkansas also 10-3.
Only 3.5-point favorites, yeah, Alabama.
What does Vegas know that we don't? Arkansas is 2-3 in SEC play. Game time 2:30. Hey. SEC Network has the TV. You can hear the game right here beginning at 2 p.m. with the Courtside Show.
Well, Arkansas women's, Bama's got a couple injuries, too.
Okay, well, that, thing that would do it. There. Arkansas women's basketball team got back to their winning ways last night. Bud Walton taking care of Florida, 84-80. Chelsea Dungy, 33. So Razorbacks improved to 11-4 overall, 2-3 conference play. Next up for Arkansas, number 5, South Carolina, Sunday in Columbia.
Hello!
The game will be televised by ESPN2 starting at 6 p.m. Yes. Lost my place there. Play calling duty updates for you play calling guys. Manny Diaz, head coach at the University of Miami, will handle defensive play calling duties to start the games at the University of Miami. David Cutcliffe, offensive genius at Duke University, will be giving up his play calling duties, just in case anybody cared. Your Ruskin and Zach Twitter poll today, at Ruskin Zach, R-U-S-C-I-N-Z-A-C-H. Urban Meyer to Jacksonville. How do you think this one's going to go? Spectacular success? Good, not great. Mediocre? Failure. 43% of you said that it will be mediocre at best.
Okay.
NFL wildcard playoffs this weekend. We'll run through them real quick. Who you got in the first one? Rams or the Packers? 85.9% of you said you want the Packers. Game number two, Ravens-Bills. 84.2% of you said, give me the Bills, Chuck. Number three, Chiefs-Browns. 86% of you want the Chefs in that one. And Bucks-Saints, 56.6% of you say, give me the Saints. One-on-one basketball, call your own fouls. Who wins, Ty Richardson or Connor Vanover? 71.6% of you said Connor Vanover.
Well, you know, now Ty is joining the ranks of the refereeing world now. I've heard about this.
Yes, he will be reffing a first-grade girls' basketball game. Now, I ask you this.
Is this an 8-foot goal thing,
yes,
probably?
Yes, yeah. I believe that would be the case. And I'll ask you this. Do you believe that Ty will take...
Can you dunk in a first grade game if you
I
get
could,
a,
yes.
Get an 8-foot goal? Okay.
Do you believe that Ty will take this so seriously that he will be calling 3 seconds? He will be telling the coach to get back in their box.
He is going to Joey Crawford the crap out of this thing.
Is he
going to
give him the end one?
He's going to start like, you know, chucking on, fans.
Right.
Yeah, hopping on one foot. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I feel
for those of you of a certain age, you'll remember John Clogerty.
Yes.
Who
Richard Hightower
loved to announce his presence in a ball game, even when no one asked for it.
Who was the NBA guy? Steve Jaffe?
Steve Jaffe. Yeah, yeah, he's another guy.
Yeah, him.
He would throw you out too.
Yeah.
That's what's going to happen here. Yeah.
Is he so timid and scared that he swallows his whistle? See, yeah. I feel like he'll go in the opposite direction. I feel that this will be the Ty show. Forget the game is inconsequential.
Here's what I would say. Like, you can't. I did a little of this, not anything of any note, but I've done a little of this. And I got to tell you that the second you put air in the whistle, you better have something to. You better be. This is what we're doing. Like, you can't be like, didn't mean to do that. Like, you got to. Even if you screw up, you got to sell it like, oh, that's a block. Nope. Right. 33 white, you know, the whole thing.
So Ryan in Prairie Grove, I guess, he said, I text the rush this morning for the first time, and he followed the bouncing ball on this. Single guy, first grade girls game, single moms.
Oh, so.
But.
That's an interesting philosophy.
But as Ryan points out, can't close.
Well, yeah. And how many single moms go home with the ref anyway? I mean, that's not a. Hey, baby, hold on a second. I got to go. Beep. I mean, come on. That's not doing anything here.
He's going about, this is a very, I think it's a unique strategy.
You want to impress the single moms. You coach first grade basketball and show up Pat Riley, Armani suit, clipboard, ready to go. That's what you do. That's what you do right there.
As the coach in a first grade?
Oh, then the moms are like, hey, look at this guy. He's got it going on.
As the father of a fourth grade girl that plays basketball, you'll be lucky if you get your coach in sweats.
Exactly.
I mean,
you got to impress them.
First grade girls' games are early. It's usually the first or second game of the day, so you're talking about 8:30 in the morning a first grade girls' game?
No. Yeah.
Ty, this is not a target-rich environment. For you.
I don't know. They're going to be wearing yoga pants, though, so that's something.
Where can we send him where he's got a chance?
Well, I don't know. He could. When's bingo night at the old folks' home? He could pull balls at the thing.
I'll set him up. You just spike him.
067.
Is Ty,
be like Jimmy McGill at a bingo night. Become friends with everybody.
Does Ty show up in full referee uniform, black pants, black shoes.
All of it.
Does he like shine the shoes?
Oh, you got to. You got to have shiny shoes when you're out there. That's a must. Put some polish on those dudes.
And Deke, you could back me up on this. Most first grade girls referees are in shorts. I've seen guys in Crocs.
My favorite is I saw a guy once throw the ball up for the tip and then sit down in a chair the rest of the game at half court. He was the ref. The ref was just sitting there in a folding chair going, all right, hey, that's a foul over there. Yeah, I think. I'm pretty sure that was a foul, yeah.
I feel like this is going to be one of those things, Ty, when you get out there, that it seemed like a good idea at the time. Well, see, I text Tommy just a minute ago, and I asked him who he had tonight because, you know, Tommy referees high school basketball. And he's like, college game.
Whoa!
Oh, excuse me, Mr. Big Time. I will not bother you with my medial question. I won't bother you with that.
And whatever you do, don't engage with the fans.
Oh, you know he will.
I don't want to encourage anything, but this could be one of these most shocking videos where fans attack a referee.
Do we know where this game's taking place? Because I would like to encourage the first grade girls' fans to engage with him.
Because the parents are terrible. They're everywhere. It doesn't matter what grade you're in. The parents are awful.
I would like a chant in the second half going, Ty can't close it. Ty can't close it.
We should show up with can you do this anymore even? The old heckle where you put somebody in the stands in a sunglasses with the little stick, you know, like the blind referee's suit. Like, can you do that anymore? No. I think it's offensive now.
Who cries first, Ty or one of the girls that commits a foul?
Yeah.
I mean, he's trying to explain it to her. She's yelling at him. They're yelling at each other. Somebody's there. Yeah. There will be tears.
I remember I got roped into officiating team camp once.
Ugh.
And I had to do like 6 games in one day. and not a lot of time in between. And my feet have never hurt so bad in my entire life. But I remember, like, the fans start yapping at you. And I'm like, what are you doing? This is a team camp game. There's nothing at stake here. Shut up. Shut up. I saw it. You didn't. That's fine. Whatever. Like, what are we doing here?
Here's Jay texting, and Ty would not shut up about him refereeing.
We did. I was paid for that gig. Those six or seven games. Yep. Whatever. I got Wendy's coupons. That's nice. What I was at.
DQ, what's a first grade girls ref get per game? Do we know?
I don't know. I think it's like might be $50 per game.
$50 per game.
I listened to the Rush this morning, and he said he wasn't getting paid for this.
Well, I wouldn't pay him either.
He's got a bad agent.
I mean, no. Well, I mean, clearly he's worked in radio long enough to know that you don't get paid.
No.
Mark the tape. So if you're in the Fort Smith area tomorrow and you see a first grade girls basketball game going on, please stop, heckle, do what you got to do. I will not. I will not get up that early to go heckle Ty.
Yeah. And whatever you do, never admit you don't know the rules. That's the.
Oh, he doesn't know the rules.
I know.
He has no idea. No. Did they give you a book for first grade girls?
I don't know what the training process is or the
Now if Tommy blows a call tonight, you know, he's doing a college game. He wouldn't tell me which one, he just said big college game.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So if he blows a call tonight, does he get to do the first grade girls game tomorrow as a punishment?
I don't know.
I'd love to see Tommy out there running around doing a first grade girls game.
No. I don't know. I
still didn't get a good explanation from him on the fight.
I have a question about intramurals over at do they play intramurals at the U of A now because of COVID, or is that over with?
I think that might be over with. The Hyper Building has weird hours and everything now.
When I was there,
sun's up,
I had this great idea. I'm going to go ref Hyper Basketball.
Why?
I made it two games. And they had a rule then, if you got three technical fouls in one game, they called the cops.
That's a fantastic rule.
And I saw they cleared the gym and they called the police. The game was over.
Who administered the technical fouls?
The officials did.
So you gave out three technical fouls?
I never had a game in. We had one game that went really well, and then the next game I was paired with a partner. It was two person officiating, not three. And anything that would happen, guys were getting killed under the basket, and she refused to blow her whistle. So much so that the supervisor at halftime. This guy who's actually now running Washington County, Brian, he's a bigwig of Washington County. He's like, guys, y'all got to call fouls. We're gonna have a problem out here. Someone to blow whistle. I'm like, it's all down there. I'm back here. I can't. She's got the look. I mean, come on.
Scott asked a question. As we speak, is Ty in front of his mirror practicing his?
Oh,
calls.
You got it. Yeah, that's good.
There's no question.
He's practicing. Yeah. No, you got to report the fouls correctly. You know.
Yeah, that
33. That's a push.
Ty, there is no over the back.
No,
Mike
not
Neighbors
a rule.
Will tell you this. There
don't
is
do
no,
that.
Yeah, there
don't
is
do
no
that.
Over the back.
Get that 3 seconds.
If I've taught Jen nothing about basketball this year, it's that there is no,
there
over,
is
the
no
back.
Over the back.
There
don't
is no
it.
Over the back.
You display your ignorance when you're like over the back.
Now he's going to be, you know, looking at his fingers, going 15. One and one.
Tell you what, we'll keep it simple. Just report the numbers with one hand. Don't do double.
But the thing is, they don't call fouls in first grade basketball. But he'll go to the scorer's table looking for some airtime.
A red 11. You got a chuck. The biggest moment for a ref in a game is a block charge, right? That's when you really get to perform, right?
Yeah,
because
you're line dancing.
You get to be like, no, that's a charge going the other way. Yeah. Or you get to do the block, and then you count the basket. Anytime you count the basket, that's also a performance.
You did it wrong. You got to put your left hand behind your head.
That's right.
That's a charge.
Yeah.
And you got to get the correct posture like you're going into a judo.
Bam! Yeah, you got to sell it. The best is the block, though, because you're like, block, block, count it.
How many times do you go to the hips? Three? You go three.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. But that's the performance, right? You get a big moment, you get a hoop and a harm.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, flush it.
Now, do you wind up? Do you go like windmill? Or is it just a quick, you know, with a hop?
You go up, and then you just boom, right there.
Yeah, there you go.
That's what you do. Nothing like a sight gag on radio.
Then you calmly walk over to the storage table and go, 11, with the push.
Well, first you have to go, okay, we're counting the basket, 11, push, one shot. That's what you do. I know a little bit about this, not a lot.
You know more than Ty does.
When I was a little kid, like 8, 9, I would go with my dad to games. Mm-hmm. He was a ref. I'm worn out by all that, by the way. Okay, hold
wait,
on.
Wait till Ty asks for the instant replay.
Yeah,
he's like, it's like, man, it's first grade basketball.
Reset the shot clock. Oh, there is no shot clock, Ty.
It's first grade basketball, man. I don't think he understands what he's getting into. I've been through first grade girls basketball. It is an arduous task.
But two of my favorite moment. My dad was working like the A or double A state tournament at Greers Ferry Westside. And I'm sitting there at the scores table. And it's one of those gyms where there's the sideline and then there's like some flat and then the front row of the bleachers. Mm-hmm. There's some kid playing with like micro machines right there in front in the floor. And my dad busted. He tripped over this kid playing with micro machines in the middle of the game. He just got up like nothing happened.
Yeah, well, oh, you can't. God. I mean, now it's like, you think he falls down running backwards?
Oh, Ty backpedaling? Yeah. Oh, that's a given. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So, yeah, like, no question. I told you, like, last year my daughter played third grade basketball, and the referee, like, comes over to the sidelines. He's got the ball, and now my daughter's jerseys are lime green, okay? And the ref walks over, and he goes, yellow ball. He got five.
Why do they do
he
that?
He got five third grade girls going, like, looking at their jerseys going, who's yellow? You know, the other team's purple. They're green, and he goes, yellow ball. So what's he do? He calls five, you know, he called 5 seconds because he dropped the ball.
In a third grade game, he called the five seconds.
You know Ty's going to do that. He's going to set the ball down.
One, two, three, four, five.
He'll call 10 seconds.
Oh, God, yes.
You know he will.
That's right, yeah.
And I guarantee you, he's got the rule book in his pocket.
That's right. Well, I mean,
it's right here, section 1.85.
Is Ty going to be one of the refs that shoot during halftime?
No question. There's no doubt.
No doubt about it.
Excellent.
He's in his own layup drill.
Layup line.
Oh, yeah. He's out there with the kids doing the layups.
He's going to shoot
it out. He's going to shoot it out. He's you up the top rope. Yes.
Oh, man. That's fantastic. Oh, boy. Wow.
Oh, God, it's going to be such a... If any of you are there, please get me some video and just text it to us.
Oh, yeah, we got to see video evidence of this.
I know...
Look, I don't know what SmackDown's doing tomorrow, but he's got to get up early for this.
I don't care what SmackDown's doing.
Or Matty T, somebody.
Somebody has to go get this.
We have to see
it. And we've got to put, like, ballet music behind it as he's...
I'm telling you right now, this game, whatever the game is, the outcome could be like, it's like an 18-point, 20-point margin as the time winds down at the end. And some first grader will hit a shot at the buzzer and be all excited.
He'll wave it off.
And Ty will come in. No, 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 it was late. It was late. No.
He'd wave it off.
Like, then, come on, give the kid a buzzer beater.
Then
come
he'll
on.
Then he'll walk over to like the bench area, pick up a towel, wipe his face off, shoot the Gatorade in his mouth, go, that's pretty good. Guaranteed.
Here's little Susie with a three-pointer at the buzzer. It's good.
No, he's
waving it off. Oh, my.
DQ getting a lot of love for her shot at Ty shooting layups.
Oh, man.
And by the way, they don't call timeouts in first grade basketball.
You want a full or a 30, coach? 30-second timeout.
He calls the four-minute media timeout. There's no question. No question. Blowing the whistle, 3:56 on the clock. All right, that's TV timeout.
Timeout media. No. My dad used to get upset because the announcers, they would say officials timeout. He's like, we don't want the timeout. We want to play and get this over with and go home. Like, it's not an officials timeout. It's a media timeout. Yeah. So,
this is going to be such a train wreck.
Yeah.
I can't wait. Somebody, look, you guys have warned us or told us about all other the goofy stuff they do. I need you to get me some video of this.
Hognoxious tweeting in, Karen's going to kill him.
Yeah, no, there's no question. Karen's he's going to say the wrong thing to the wrong parent. That's right. And Karen's going to come out of the stand. When she gets in his face, what are you going to do?
No, it's not.
I've seen it happen at an upward game.
Oh, yeah.
Good, clean, Christian fun there. Karen didn't think that was as funny.
No. Oh, man.
Oh, he's going to be calling flagrant ones.
Oh, yeah.
This is going to be.
Are you taping the game? Are you videotaping? Can I look at that replay?
Can you play it back for me,
please?
That's
right. All right. Yeah, I got an F1 over here. No, this is a common foul.
They're going to be like, now in first grade basketball, they just send kids en masse. I mean, there is no whistle. Ty's going to be like, no, get back.
You got to check in first.
You got to check in. Where's the horn? All right, come on. Oh, it's going to be so bad. Micah Belavis says he'll be dunking during timeouts.
On the 8-foot rim. Right. Yeah, he'll tear it down or something, dunk it. The biggest calls in first grade basketball are jump ball and out of bounds.
There's no traveling. There are no
fouls. It's the NBA. You get like 9 steps. It doesn't matter.
What you are is the guy that retrieves the basketball. That's
right.
That's all you're doing.
That's right.
And
you're there to get yelled at
by
the parents.
Tommy probably got in between his ears and started coaching him up, which is perfect because he'll freeze.
Yeah.
And
he won't know what to do. Yeah.
And God forbid if he's got a partner. God forbid if Ty's got a partner.
Well, you can't do a game solo. You got to have at least 2 people out there.
Tommy said he'll be doing the evaluation. Tommy will be in there with a clipboard doing the evaluation.
Do you know what happens? Do you know how this is how it worked? My dad would go to these camps in the summer to try to get hired by like the Division I leagues. And what they used to, I don't know what they do now, but what they used to do is they would have like a big name ref that they pay to be there that would wear a mic during the game and would just comment on the officiating the whole time. It's like, Nelson, why did you call that there? That was not, you know, like that's how they evaluate him at these big officiating camps across the
Kyle
country.
Just texted in, do you think Ty will stretch before the game?
Couple of jumping jacks. Those standing jumps. What are they? When you jump really high?
Like Billy Ho.
That's right. Oh, yeah. Let me do some of that Jane Fonda stuff, too. Yeah. Hey.
No, he'll be stretching beforehand. Oh. It's going to be such a disaster.
He'll be
calling 3 seconds.
Yeah.
Half of them just stand there.
Double dribble.
They don't know who's guarding who. If they put the little wristbands on them to tell them which color to guard, you know, you guard the girl with the blue one.
Oh, they do that?
No, they do that in upward. Which is, again, this is like herding cats. If you got one kid out there that can play, then you're probably going to win.
Yeah. When my sister played like elementary school basketball, like the city league, like she was the only one that could play. Like everybody else was just, you know.
Apparently, Greg in Fort Smith says that Tommy made the comment that it would be a good place for him to find a date. Tommy, I see where you were going.
Because those refs get all the babes.
Yeah. I can't tell you the number of times I've seen the ref walk out with 2 or 3 women.
One each arm. Looking like Sam Kennison leaving a club back in the day.
Yeah. Let's go take some pictures of what I'm about to eat for lunch. Please.
Maybe you've heard me. I'm on the radio. Yeah. Oh, what a mess.
Oh, man.
Oh, God. All right. Well, we'll have to... update that on Monday.
All right. Will asks, is he going to have the tearaway pants for his real ref pants?
Yes, that's right.
He'll have the tearaways. Oh, breaking out the good
is
ref
gonna
pants.
Is he going to go ref shirt? And by the way, in high school, why'd they go to these gray shirts? The refs wear black and white stripes. That's the way it's supposed
to be.
A
dude in the 7A that wears yoga pants.
Oh, in the JV, yes.
Yeah, I can't. No.
There's a few of them. Yeah. I mean, like in the varsity games, they're gone to the gray shirts. I hate them.
What's the over under on travels?
Oh, we're looking at 20? Least 7.5.
20. He'll call 20. He'll call 20. Look, he's got to get his 20. Air. He's got to get his airtime.
There's no flow that way.
I can't wait for him to wave off a shot. No shot. No.
Give the kid a buzzer beater. Come on. Maybe the only thing they accomplished in their life, and you're waving it off. All right, Ruskin and Zach.